Technology.ie, episode 68.
Technology.ie is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
Brought to you by Black Knight, it's the Technology.ie podcast, episode 68 for August 22nd, 2013, with Michaela Nealon and Conor Muinechon. Dias Marivagas, Kith Falter, hello and welcome to technology.ie. This is Conor Muinechon and there is Michaela Nealon. Hi, Michaela.
Hi, Con.
We're live. We're actually live this time, not just a recorded podcast, which will be distributed as usual on technology.ie. But we're sending this out as we record it live on Wednesday night. We're sending it out as a test stream on digiculture.ie as well. How does it feel, Michaela?
I'll just try to be very careful to watch all my P's and Q's.
That's it. You'll have to do the best you can. A little bit of a delay there, I think. It might be because of the streaming uploaded as well. I hope that's not the case. What I want to do... how was your week, first of all?
Oh, grand. I mean, it's busy. Kept very, very busy.
Yeah, I see you've been busy tweeting. And I've been... And you've been busy flipboarding. And you've added me into the technology.ie flipboard as well. And I've been having fun with that. It's a great way to collect links and stories and things of interest and gather them together and publish them for people who share your interests.
Yeah, I mean, I like the Flipboard app. I mean, I use it as my one of my main ways of getting news, both, you know, technology, general news, business news. So I use it on my mobile and I use it on the iPad all the time. Mm-hmm. Except, of course, when I'm disconnected from the internets.
Yeah, as you were on your holidays recently. I've also been noticed that you blogged again about the Black Knight, advantages when it comes to PRISM and FISA and the NSA and surveillance and things like that. We'll talk about that later as well. I've spent the week, Michaela, transferring all of my hosting to Black Knight. You might be
good.
Glad to hear.
About bloody time.
I've had a cloud server from you for a while, and just this past week got pretty much finished moving everything over there as well. There's a little personal site out there as well called digiculture.ie, which is where, for an experiment this week, we're streaming this program live using Icecast streaming server. You wanted to ask me about that, Michaela.
Yeah, I was just curious because, I mean, I've never bothered setting it up. So,
Yeah. You
know, how hard was it to set up? I mean, you know, are we talking about hours and hours and hours of playing around with configuration files, or was it a nice and simple, you know, click, done, thanks? I mean, how hard was it to set up?
I wish I could say it was hard and really difficult, but it was kind of embarrassingly easy. I started it the last week when we were doing the podcast, and other things distracted me. I didn't get it finished in time for the show last week, but I did later on that night. It was, as I say, kind of ridiculously easy. Icecast is the streaming server that we're using, so I've installed that on my Linux server. I installed it as an RPM, as a package. You can install it with Yum, which I did. The configuration is pretty straightforward, Michaela. There's a configuration file you go through. You can change some of the defaults or not. The best thing to do is change the password straight away. And if you want to go to digiculture.ie /8000, it's on port 8000, is where the actual stream. It's streaming on a mount point off of that at port 8000 /live.mp3. But at port 8000, you can see there's an actual admin page for it that's provided as well. So you can see a lot of statistics. You can see, let's have a look and check it out now. You can actually see who's listening or how many people are actually listening live on the stream at any one time. Have you got it up there?
Yeah, I do. It's saying stream title, no name, stream description, unspecified, audio MPEG, Current listener 7, peak listener 7.
Yeah.
So we're not that popular yet.
Anyway. Not just yet. Well, it's an experiment, but we're giving it a go anyway. But as I say, you install that, and then basically it runs as a service, Michele, on the Linux box. You set that up to run automatically, and the next thing you need to do is you need both the listeners and the streaming to it, our clients to that server. So there are a number of things specified and recommended as clients. I'm running a tool called BUTT, which is an acronym, Michele. BUTT is an acronym for broadcast using this tool. And from what I could see, it seemed to be the best thing there. I'm running a Windows version of that on a Windows laptop here. Our usual setup here, by the way, when we're doing the show, Michele, is I talk to you on a Mac here. We're Skyping over a Mac. I'm running a little sound mixing desk along with that. And I usually send the output of the mixer to an adjacent machine. Sometimes it's just a pocket flash recorder or something like that. Lately, I've been using a Windows laptop for that. So, in fact, I'm using that same Windows laptop both to record the show directly and also to send it to the BUTT encoder as well, which simply takes that audio, makes an MP3 stream of it, and connects to the Icecast server and sends that up. It's great fun. I've been meaning to do this for years, Michele. So it's been a lot of fun, and I've been streaming music and stuff like that. The other cool thing is that you need some kind of automated tool for broadcasting if you're running a whole load of music or something like that. There's various things you can use for that. I'm using something called Megaseg, which is a broadcast automation tool, or a playout system, as it's called in radio, which is, I have a licensed version of it that I bought for $30, $30 I think it was, about a year ago or two, and it runs on Mac only, and it's beautiful. Fabulous. Great fun. So, again, shout out to everyone who's in the chat room there. There's a couple of people. Jason Rowe is on there. Hiya, Jason. And he's...
And he's advertising Parquet.
What's Parquet? Is that something he's involved with, is it?
Yeah, it's a parking app. so you can find parking around Dublin City.
Cool. I like it.
He's been working on that for the last year, I think.
Who are those other guys? Do you know some of the other guys on?
No, I've no idea. Yeah. Sorry, yeah. I mean, I might know them, and I might know of them, but yeah. I don't know who they are. It's true. Who cares? They were foolish enough to join to listen to us. So sure, it's fun. They're all welcome.
You're very welcome indeed, guys, and feel free to abuse us in the chat room there. It's all on digiculture.ie, hastily thrown together, I should say, using WordPress this afternoon. Okay, let's get into it, Michele. There's lots to talk about. Netflix, let's start off with, you're delighted that they've added a wish... wish list feature, tell me.
Well, okay. One, you know, you've got Netflix, or you did have Netflix. I can't remember where you are with Netflix these days.
Currently on a hiatus. We'll get back to it again, yeah.
Right, well, one of the things that happens on Netflix is it recommends stuff to you, and, you know, you'd kind of go off and you might be looking at, you know, other films starring actor X or actress Y, or by director A or B or whatever, and you come across all these wonderful titles, and you might think, ah, yeah, I'd love to see that at some stage, but not now. Mm. And there was no way up until they released this to just kind of, you know, tag it or mark it for, you know, something to watch another day. The only way I found to do it was to play the first few seconds of some content, so that would then appear in my, recently viewed.
That's clever. I hadn't thought of that, actually. But it is definitely an omission on the part of Netflix.
Yeah, it's a pain in the neck. Because, yeah. I mean, you know, you'd find things and then, you know, you wouldn't find them again. Whereas with, say, Apple iTunes on the, you know, the Apple TV, you can do is you can add stuff to a wish list. Mm. Quickly and easily add to wish list. And, you know, you could then go back into your wish list from time to time and go, oh, yeah, you know, I'd mark that for something to watch when I was in the right frame of mind or whatever. So what they've done is they've added this new thing, which is called My List. And, you know, basically what you do is you look at a bit of content and you go, oh, yeah, I might watch that later. And an option appears where you can just add it to this My List thing. And then you get this new row appearing on your dashboard, on whichever client you're using, be it the, you know, the website, the Apple TV, the iPad version, the iPhone version, or whatever version you're using. I haven't tried it on my Apple TV yet. So I just haven't had a chance because it's only rolled out. They've only started rolling this out today, and it won't be fully available across all platforms immediately, but it will become available over the next couple of weeks. It's available on the website version now. I don't know if it's on the Apple TV version, but this will make life a lot easier for people like me who, you know, consume a lot of the TV and films via Netflix.
Yeah, and it's just one of a number of features that they've been rolling out recently, and features and improvements, and they've commissioned obviously a lot of new content, a lot of original series and programming that lately. You also blogged, I think, on the Flipboard this week, Michele, about some classic movies that they've added to that.
Yeah, this is one of the things, you know, with Netflix, and it's one of the things people always complain about is, you know, why isn't X available? Why can't I watch Y? And you know they've inked a deal with Weinstein Films, which will give them access to their entire catalog. And Weinstein have a load of good quality films that, you know, weren't available up until now, all in one place. Mm. I think HBO or one of the others had a contract, and that contract is due to expire, and then Netflix will take over. Now that doesn't start until 2016. But it's, you know, it's good to see that, you know, they've got some good content deals with other studios. So there's, you know, nice flow of good quality films and TV shows coming in. Of course, they're also producing their own stuff. Another feature they added there a couple of weeks back, I think it was the option
of multiple accounts, is it?
Yeah, it's multiple profiles.
Yes. Now, that's something that I think in the first month of Netflix availability in the UK and Ireland, that's something that I remember Conor O'Neill mentioned in he blogged a review of it at the time. It's something I've missed. And if you've got kids in the house, Michele, you come the end of the weekend, it's, you know, you're recently watched and your favourites and your recommended. It's full up with cartoons and stuff like that and not what you want to necessarily watch yourself.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not an issue for me because, you know, I live alone, so I don't have that problem. But yeah, I can see that, you know, for other friends out there, you know, their other half might have completely different tastes, or, you know, if you've got kids around and the kids like watching cartoons, you know, you probably don't want to be watching cartoons as much as they would. So yeah, I think, yeah, that kind of thing is pretty cool. I mean, the and it's not separate accounts, it's like it's separate profiles.
That's right.
It's kind of say, you know, this is, you know, Little Johnny's profile or whatever. It's a cool option, and it's one which was definitely needed.
I think you can have up to four profiles per account, which is very cool and very worthwhile. So well done, Netflix. What's next, Michele? You've picked out this one. Zuck wants to connect the world. This is brand new. Just announced, is it today or?
It was announced late last night, probably, I think, even almost early this morning, Irish time. Yeah, this kind of thing. It starts off with some kind of rambly post on Zuckerberg's Facebook page, and then links through to press releases and everything else. And it goes on about you know, how Facebook has connected, you know, 1.5 billion people or something, and how, you know, there's so many billion people out there who aren't connected, and they want to connect them, but not just with Facebook, but to the internet and everything else. So they've launched under internet.org, and it's a partnership between Facebook and a bunch of other companies.
Facebook, Ericsson.
I think the general idea is to try.
Facebook, Ericsson, MediaTek, Nokia, Opera, Qualcomm, and Samsung are the founding partners of this. I presume they're going to invite more people to get on board as well. This looks like Mark Zuckerberg's big philanthropic idea, Michele. I mean, obviously he's a young man yet. He's achieved an unbelievable amount in business. He hasn't really been involved so much in philanthropy or in I suppose changing the world. But the likes of Bill Gates and Elon Musk and all of these other guys that are out there, these guys all have big ideas. I suppose this is a logical extension of Mark Zuckerberg's one. If his mission is to connect the world through Facebook, there's a lot of the world who are deprived of internet access almost entirely. How are they going to go about this in practice, though, Michele? What are they proposing?
I don't know. I mean, there's that press release that's out there, and there's a few, you know, it's the usual kind of thing. Hey, we've got this big idea.
Yeah.
So I would say I wouldn't get too excited about whatever they've announced now. I'd keep a close eye on how it pans out over the next few weeks and months. Because, you know, the thing with all these things is, you know, you start off and say, oh, yeah, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, it's going to be wonderful, it's going to be great, and then you hit a brick wall, you know, so... Oh, look, there's more people, by the way, on that thing there. There's now 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6...
On the chat room. Hi, chat room.
There's a bunch of people on there now.
And Jason Rowe has posted a link there, by the way, in relation to... We'll put this... Actually, anything good that people want to toss into the chat room, we'll throw them into the show notes on technology.ie when we publish the podcast version of this show as well. But Jason's recommending instantwatcher.com. He says it's really great for Netflix too, if on the US you can add to your playlists. All right. Next up, Michele, we've got a... Oh yeah, and we're talking about Facebook exactly. This next thing is something I think is really cool, because recently they'd rolled out embedding Facebook posts, but they'd rolled it out sort of on a restricted basis for some high profile media organizations such as Mashable and the Huffington Post and CNN. Now they're saying anyone can do this. Mm-hmm. You can take your Facebook content and you can embed it on your blog post. You were pointing out as well, Michele, there's a WordPress plugin released for that.
Yeah, I mean, they announced this, I think it was earlier today, earlier this evening possibly. So anybody can embed any public Facebook post, so be that from a private individual or a business page, fan page, whatever you want to call it, anything that is actually public can be embedded on a third-party website. If you're a WordPress user, the WordPress Facebook plugin, which was developed by Facebook, which is also available on GitHub, oddly enough, mm-hmm. Supports this. So I was playing around earlier. I grabbed the plugin and threw it up on a WordPress blog that I have. I mean, I have a few. Mm-hmm. Just to see the functionality. It works really, really well. It's something, it does require a bit of tweaking, because you've got to go in, you've got to create an app on Facebook, you've got to set various parameters on there to get access to all the functionality. You've got to, it supports just about every single aspect of the Open Graph imaginable via this one plugin. But you know, the one that I was interested in was just this thing about being able to embed stuff. And yeah, it works really, really well. It's nice. It's like, you know, the way you can embed tweets into a blog post. You can embed YouTube videos easily by just chucking the URL in. So it does exactly the same thing, and it's simple and easy to use.
Yeah, but I mean, Netflix has really been, I think, unusual in not allowing you to embed its content.
Facebook.
Sorry, I beg your pardon. Facebook has been unusual, has been exceptional in that regard. It's been really this walled garden element of it has been very strong in relation to that.
Not entirely.
Yeah.
Well, not entirely. I mean, you know, Twitter and Facebook and a couple of the others, you know, they've been having this kind of ongoing war between them, where they were, you know, blocking access to each other. So
yeah,
you know, you can't embed an Instagram photo on Twitter anymore, but you can embed an Instagram photo on a blog,
right?
You know, so I mean, but you can embed YouTube videos on Facebook. I mean, you know, the kind of thing is like a lot of them are kind of protecting their own kind of space, as it were. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, Facebook kind of removed a lot of functionality in terms of RSS things, I think it was a couple of years back. Mm. But they seem to be pushing out more on this Open Graph idea, which, you know, it's kind of cool.
It is kind of cool. Also kind of cool is, and we always like things like this, and you're on the lookout for them, I think, Michele. Your antennae are tuned for whenever cultural organisations open things up into the public domain and allow people to share them and use them digitally. The John Paul Getty Museum have recently announced that they were lifting restrictions on some parts of their image collection. And this is what you said. You talked about the Rijksmuseum, I think, before, Michele. This is even more open and less restrictive than their conditions.
Yeah, this is really cool. The Rijksmuseum announced something a couple of months back. It was a kind of, hey, you know, we're going to let you play around with stuff a bit more. It's going to be a bit more open. you know, you can grab higher quality, you know, but there were restrictions, you know, you had to, there were quite a number, there were restrictions still there. It was more kind of, you know, for personal use, you can play around with this a bit if you want. Hey, but if you want to commercialize this, you're going to have to start paying us license fees. With the John Paul Getty Museum, they went, no, we own the rights to these. We're just opening it up. Off you go, have fun.
It's extraordinary. And as you pointed out, you've blogged this on technology.ie, Michele, included some very striking images there. The battlefield scene from the American Civil War, extraordinary scene there. And a beautiful photograph of a young woman whom I had to Google and look up.
Oh, jeez, Con, I'm shocked.
Yeah, well, I'm not.
Terry, you don't know who she was.
I don't, but I do now. She was a Shakespearean actress in the 1800s, Michele. But the photograph, extraordinarily beautiful image of her taken at the age of 16, because as far as I can gather, she was involved in acting from a very young age. But an absolutely amazing, beautiful picture, Michele, and beautifully composed and beautifully shot. But it must have been shot sometime in the, looking at this, 1840s, 1850s.
She was born in 1847, okay. So that would be like 1863, thereabouts.
Wow.
I mean, you know, I went through the images. I didn't go through every single one, because when there's, you know, 4,600 odd. And some of them were really quirky and weird, but I mean, pretty cool. Mm. I was just trying to find a couple of images that were interesting of themselves without being too off the wall.
Yeah.
And I say, you know, I didn't have time to go through every single one. But, you know, the thing, what makes it cool is the way they've released these, it's like, you know, do whatever the hell you want with these.
And that's, you want to tweak these,
you want to turn it into a T-shirt and sell a million T-shirts, off you go.
Yeah. And, you know, when you history has shown, really, when you do that kind of thing with cultural images, especially in the digital age, extraordinary things can happen. Also, there's going to be a lot of silly memes and macros and things like that as well, based on some of these images. But it's all part of the culture, Michele, and well worthwhile. You're right. It will be interesting to see what the result of this, and equally whether other organisations and trustees of some of our cultural heritage, such as the John Paul Getty Museum and the Rijksmuseum, whether others will actually follow in their footsteps as well. Let's move on, Michele. We want to talk about, we've got a couple of stories relating to Amazon.com. First of all, you know, Jeff Bezos has gone and bought, what is it, the Washington Post?
Yeah, but that's him personally. It's not Amazon the company.
Okay.
Which is, you know, it's an important distinction because, you know, I think some people were spinning that entire story as if Bezos equals Amazon equals Washington Post, which isn't true. It's Bezos personally who's done that.
Okay. The other thing that they're doing, that Amazon are doing, is that they're now selling magazine subscriptions, not just digital subscriptions, but also print subscriptions to magazines like Vogue and Wired and Vanity Fair.
Yeah, but what they've done is they've signed a deal with Condé Nast. I mean, Condé Nast, they're the publishers of Wired, Cosmopolitan, and a load of other high-quality publications. So they've done some deal, and the details of the revenue share haven't been disclosed, but, you know, people are suggesting that it's like 30% or something to Amazon. So for Condé Nast, it's another way of getting people to subscribe. For Amazon, it's another source of revenue. Win-win for everybody.
But not win-win for Amazon yesterday, or day before yesterday, I should say, Michele, because they went offline for a while on Amazon.com, but Amazon.co.uk was fine at the same time.
Yeah, this is weird. I mean, Amazon going offline completely, I honestly can't remember the last time that happened. I mean, it's not the first time it's happened, but it's been a long time since it has happened. And I think Kevin Murphy, who you remember we had on a few months back, I think he tweeted something about how Amazon are making, it's just like $115,000 a minute or something. So, you know, that would be an incredibly expensive downtime. I mean, you know, we're a hosting company. Mm. Downtime, it's bad. People say it'll cost them money. But when you're looking at somebody as big as Amazon. Oh yeah, Amazon revenue. Amazon has revenue of $116,000 per minute. Mm. So you can actually map that to real money. I mean, it's not like some of the stuff that, you know, you see where people go, oh, you know, my website's been offline for 5 minutes. I've lost a fortune. And, you know, the reality is they haven't.
It appears, although you reported, Michele, that in general, Amazon Web Services appear to be online at the same time, Michele. You've posted a link as well to an article which points out that there was a fall off in performance on Amazon Web Services as well, which obviously affected customers or affected paying customers of that service.
Yeah, I mean, this is, again, you know, by the sounds of things, whatever happened impacted one or two of their data centers. Mm. So the thing with the way Amazon has data centers spread across the globe, for me in Ireland, if I try to access a lot of the services, it's going to take me to one of the European ones.
Yeah.
So it appeared as if it was working fine. You know, I tried a bunch of different things that I thought. I tried AWS and I tried a couple of other ones. Mm. But the actual Amazon websites were working fine for Amazon.it, .es.
Okay, so European versions of Amazon and European versions of AWS hosted.
Yeah, they don't seem to have been impacted at all.
Right.
They don't seem to have been impacted.
Okay. And there hasn't been any update or there hasn't been any comment from Amazon on this?
Not that I'm aware of, but I mean, the general thing with Amazon is that they don't comment. I mean, third parties with you know, good knowledge and good understanding of the technology and everything, will probably talk about it and you know, suggest possible explanations as to why something happened. Mm. But the general thing with Amazon is, you know, we're not going to comment.
Yeah. Okay, Michele, I want to talk to you about a few Black Knight related stories. Now, first of all, your designers have been busy. Fantastic work on you've redesigned your YouTube page, I can see as well. I'm looking at pressroom.blackknight.com. Has that been redesigned as well, or is that a new site?
Pressroom.blackknight.com. We've had that for a while.
Yeah.
Basically, what happened, Colin, is we were using a number of different services for distributing press releases. And, you know, we're using a number of different methods for distributing them. And, you know, a couple of services did offer us a press room in inverted commas, but it wasn't that attractive. It wasn't that customizable. And, you know, we kind of bludgeoned in a hack into the company website whereby we would pull in certain blog posts with certain tags or categories or something and get them to display on the website as, you know, the latest press releases. But it wasn't ideal by any stretch of the imagination. So what we did a few months back was we set this up. It's using a third-party service called PressDoc. They're based in the Netherlands. And, you know, you can get the kind of semi-free version, which will give you a URL like, say, pressdoc.com/blacknight or blacknight.pressdoc or something like that. Yeah. But if you go onto one of the paid plans, you're able to customize the look and feel. You're able to put your logo on there, some of the branding. And it's got a bunch of nice little features that enables you to, you know, share content quickly and easily. You know, it's very much aimed at the kind of, you know, 2013 social media type scenario, whereas some of the other ones, I mean, sure, they've got really powerful, cool things, but they're just not quite, you know, with it in terms of what they're offering you.
Yeah.
So we've been using that for the last few months.
Okay.
If you look in there as well, you'll see there's our own press releases, plus we're able to pull in links from third parties.
Okay, so they would be like client companies or that, or industry news or?
Well, yeah, press coverage. I mean, if you see, there's links to us there going back, you know, in July, domain name wire.com, heise.de, Circle ID, Domain Insight, et cetera, et cetera. So as articles get published about us, What we do is we add them in there.
Okay, clippings.
You see the little icon with the little arrow.
Yes.
So we're able to kind of collect it all together because, you know, one of the things, Con, is, you know, it's very, if you don't collect the stuff as it comes out, then afterwards it's like, you know, we were mentioned in the media, but when?
Exactly, yeah. No, it's nice. And I got to say, again, hats off to your designers as well, Michaela, because the black and green Black Knight livery is becoming very sort of distinctive, and I notice very consistent across a lot of your sites, and that's cool. Your use of social media is cool. You've got awards for that recently and that as well. And you've gone and blogged it and said, well, actually, here's how we do it. How we use social media for customer service is a recent post.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of reasons for this. I mean, one of the things, you know, we're fairly consistent about this. You know, we embrace social media. We use social media. We believe that social media is incredibly important for any company that wants to offer anything these days. And it doesn't matter what sector they're really in. You know, social media is where it's at. I mean, at so many levels. And one of the others posted something on our Facebook page the other day as kind of an FYI to our clients. And it just made me think, oh, my God, you know, we've completely forgotten to tell people that we're doing this, because when we implemented Zendesk as our new help desk back in, I think it was January, one of the features that we enabled was their social media integration. So Zendesk allows for very, very tight integration with both Facebook and Twitter. So the problem we had was this, is that over time, people were coming to our Facebook wall and they were posting things there that were, you know, support queries, you know, my website's not working, my email's not working, is there a problem with X, is there a problem with Y? And only a couple of people had access to the Facebook page, and nobody really had any way of knowing when something was posted, or even if they knew it was posted, you know, they might find out, but it could be several hours because, you know, there's delays and everything else. Mm. And then it was the same with Twitter. You know, you have people sending direct messages to the Twitter account. If the query is more technical than the people who have access to social media can handle, then they have to go off. They have to email somebody and go, right, hey, you know, this person's having a problem with X or a problem with Y. How do they deal with it? So what the Zendesk thing allows us to do, as I've tried to explain in that post there, is that it allows us to pull all that stuff straight into our help desk. So if somebody posts something on our Facebook wall, it'll appear in our help desk magically within a couple of minutes. Actually, it's funny because one of our technical support team is actually listening, or was listening, to this. Oh, no, I think he's gone. Oh, well, never mind. He was listening. I think he got bored. The thing we want people to understand, of course, is that it doesn't happen in real time.
Yeah.
There can be a bit of a delay for, you know, a multitude of different reasons. I mean, the system we're using is bloody big. It's hosted on third-party servers. Both Twitter and Facebook have API limits. You know, there's a whole bunch of different reasons why, you know, tweeting or Facebook or sending something via Facebook might lead to a bit of a lag. Mm. But it's going to get there. It's going to get through. And, you know, it means that we can route it to the correct department, and somebody can respond to it appropriately or ask for a follow-up or whatever. And, you know, in other cases, it's a case of, you know, somebody's posting on Facebook, but they've already opened a ticket in the help desk.
And this allows you, this Zendesk integration with social media, this allows you to sort of to tie those together and to be basically consistent across all of the different platforms.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it also means as well that, instead of, you know, the thing is this, you know, at times, I mean, it's not like that now as much, but, you know, at times there were only like three or four people who had access to anything in terms of Twitter and Facebook. And let's say myself and Paul might be at a conference in Texas. That's, you know, I think it's about 8 hours time, 8 hour time difference. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the action could go down while the two of us are still fast asleep.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got other people who are doing things. And, you know, the social media stuff, while it's very, very important, you know, they're also doing other things. Mm. So they can't be looking at Twitter and Facebook all the time just on the off chance. So it's all rooted in there. not absolutely everything. I mean, if so, we don't, as I've mentioned in the blog post, we don't root in the mentions, because if we did, our help desk would end up being completely swamped with a lot of irrelevant junk. I mean, it's not that what people are saying to us is irrelevant, but, you know, if you're having a backwards and forwards with somebody about something very, very specific, or it could be something completely frivolous, you don't really want that going into the help desk. I mean, not at this juncture. I mean, maybe at some point further down the road. Who knows?
Context is everything, is what you're saying, really, Michele. And,
Totally.
No, we'll post a link to that in with the podcast as well, because people who are interested in it can find out more details there as well. As I say, you've been really busy, Michele. I want to talk to you about, you've redesigned the YouTube page, and you've posted a whole load of new video content in video tutorials. What's that about?
Well, again, it's one of those things. I mean, what happens a lot of the time, it's, you know, you have all these things like, oh yeah, we must do this, we must do that, and there's always something else, and it gets pushed further down the list. One of the things that I'm personally conscious of is that when it comes to support documentation and everything else for software and other things that we, you know, we provide to people in terms of services, we were lacking in some areas. It needed to be better. It needed to be clearer. And, you know, the YouTube videos work pretty well. We had been using Blip as well, because I wanted us to kind of try and get away a little bit from, you know, give Google everything. But, you know, realized that realistically speaking, there's no way to avoid it. I mean, that YouTube is where a lot of people go for the videos. There's no point fighting it. So we got a bunch of video tutorials covering cPanel and WHM, because we're now offering that on the cloud hosting, and a whole load of other ones on email, both on things like iPad, iPhone, and a whole load of other ones on commonly used FTP applications.
A huge amount of detail. Michele, you've posted dozens of videos in the last few days.
I think we probably put about 100 and something of them up.
Wow.
Or something like that. Now
have you produced all these yourselves? Or
No. We're not totally insane. we put them up. We use a third-party company that does video tutorials for the hosting industry. I mean, that's what they do. And the main one of the fears I had was that some of the tutorials, you know, they're completely irrelevant to us, because, you know, the control panel we use for a shared hosting is very, very custom and everything else. But a lot of the other ones, like, say, you know, how to use Voyager FTP. I've never actually used Voyager FTP. I didn't even know what it was, but never mind. Actually, here's a better one. Windows Live Mail. You remember Outlook Express?
Yes.
Well, Outlook Express is gone. It's dead. It doesn't exist anymore. It's been replaced by this thing called Windows Live Mail,
which works the same way, I guess. But it's an online client.
No, it's a desktop client.
Oh, right. Okay. So that's their new version of Outlook Express, essentially.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's just, you know, the thing is this: for a lot of our customers, you know, the setting up an email account, it's something, you know, that they're not comfortable with doing. And, you know, these tutorials, the video tutorials are, you know, well, they're visual. So, you know, somebody can sit there, you can look at it, they can follow it step by step. They're broken out into, you know, nice, easy to follow steps. You know, this is how you do this bit, this is how you do that bit. And, you know, we'll probably add a few more for Plesk, which we're offering on VPS and on cloud.
I had noticed that, actually, because I was using Plesk during the week and I'd noticed that there wasn't any video content from that. But that's on the way as well.
Well, yeah, we'll probably get that in the next few days.
Great.
You see, the cPanel stuff was higher priority, because it's one of those things that, you know, we really want to push cPanel as much as we can. But for other stuff, yeah, we've got a bunch of videos that we did ourselves, and we'll be also adding, you know, what they call like kind of text tutorials. In other words, it's, you know, it's kind of like HTML pages with screenshots and everything else. It's just, you know, the thing is, Con, if somebody can go along and can follow one of those tutorials, or one of our staff can point them to one of those tutorials, and if it's integrated with the text ones, it should be able to integrate them into the help desk.
Yeah.
So when somebody starts to open a ticket, it should tell them, hey, have you looked at this?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's you know, and of course the design, of course, is James. You know, not me, not an army of designers. It's James who did all that.
It's James Larkin. So well done to James. Fantastic work, as I said, Michaela. You've been very, very busy indeed. You collectively, I should say, or ye, as we say in the West of Ireland. And I want to talk briefly. I'm going to talk in a minute about we've got a Prism and NSA related story coming up in relation to the Grocklaw blog. But very briefly again, we talked about this last week, Michaela. You were highlighting the fact that Black Knight, as a wholly Irish-owned and Irish-hosted hosting company, is not impacted by Prism, and you've issued another press release in relation to that. Have you new information in relation to that, or is it just emphasising that point again?
Well, we haven't issued a press release on a previous account, but I've just blogged about it.
Okay, so now you've formally issued a press release and getting that word out there. What kind of response have you got to that?
Well, it's been interesting. I mean, some people laugh because, you know, they find it amusing. I got quite an amusing email back from a well-known journalist because something to do with the way I punctuated it. And actually, if I look at it now, I can see why they laughed. Because I put they with a capital T, but I didn't put are not with capitals. So it was a bit weird and inconsistent. But hey, these things happen. The feedback in general on both the blog post and the press release has been very, very positive. I mean, you know, there's been so much going on in the last few weeks and months around surveillance, governments, NSA, Prism, and so many of the other things to do, you know, digital rights, privacy, who watches the watchers. I mean, there's this massive debate going on now at the moment around this. I mean, if you saw there over the weekend, a lot of stories coming out about The Guardian in the wake of one of The Guardian's journalists' husbands or partners or whatever.
That's right.
Being held up in Heathrow for 9 hours or something.
That's right, David Miranda. That's a shocking story. And I've got to say, even from a human rights point of view, Michele, from a business point of view, there are a lot of companies, large and small, and in a lot of sectors such as financial and other areas who deal with sensitive client data or just sensitive personal data for people, and who've got to be evaluating their policies in relation to this, Michele. And I noticed that President Obama has come out and made a speech on this recently as well, and he said that maybe they will look at this. These FISA courts, for example, are pretty one-sided. They've never denied a FISA request. That's a request under this legislation, which allows them to subpoena information, essentially. And not only that, but the person who is subpoenaed under this legislation and by this court can't even talk about it. They're gagged.
Yeah, it's quite scary. Because, I mean, you know, we've spoken, I think, in the past about these super injunctions and other things, which are, you know, quite public in how they happen in some ways. Somebody just actually said there in the chat, Lavasoft had to close down.
That's right, and that leads me into what...
to offer an encrypted email service.
That leads me into what I was going to talk about, Michele, which is that Lavasoft were an encrypted email service. They said that they couldn't do it because they received a FISA request and they decided to close down rather than actually comply with that. Now, you know, obviously... they're probably already in defiance of that legislation now. But you linked as well, and you posted this either on, I think you tweeted it or flipboarded it, which was the response of Grocklaw, which is a well-respected legal blog, which has decided that in response in particular to Lavasoft's, or is it Lavabit? Whatever.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. I mean, basically...
Lavabit, yeah.
Yeah, the Grocklaw post explaining why they're shutting down, or why, well, I think it might be run by one or two people.
Yeah,
is very, very revealing.
Is she overreacting? It's Pamela Jones who's the editor of this. She's saying that because the way she produces this site depends on the collaboration with the users, with the readers, and that this depends on the security and privacy of email. And because she can no longer guarantee that, she can't continue to do that.
Well, okay, there's a couple of things here. I mean, first off, I can sympathise with it, and I do understand the argument. The thing about email at a simple level is you know, it's you can encrypt the connection between your machine and the outgoing mail server.
Yeah.
You can encrypt the connection between the inbound mail server and your desktop or other client. Having a secure between large inverted commas connection between those servers and anywhere else is a totally different thing. You need to look at actually encrypting the email in its entirety. But even doing that won't help when it comes to the infamous metadata. I mean, the you know, received on, sent by, you know, all that data that's in an email header that appears in machines that an email goes through. You can't remove that because, well, you know, that's how SMTP works.
Yeah.
So,
but presumably, you know, that's some of what Lavabit was offering, Michele, is it?
I don't really know exactly what they were offering, but you know, there's several companies out there that offer, and have, I mean, it's been services like this for years, that offer various levels of secure email. At some level, there's companies out there that offer, you know, anonymized email. So, like, you'd send an email from either a special bit of software or using standard software to a specific email address, and it would rip the email to shreds and send it off via multiple servers and then bring it back together again at the far side, and all the traces of how it'd been sent and all this kind of thing would be gone. It'd be kind of it's a kind of anonymizing service. And you know, there's a lot of other technologies out there, but you know, it's one of those things that if you're in a situation where you can't know what the government is looking at, what they're fishing around for, how much data they're actually collecting, then, you know, if you're gathering like the kind of whistleblowery type stuff, then that is a problem.
What it comes down to, really, I suppose, Michele, is oversight and that kind of thing. And a lot of people are concerned that the checks and balances which are currently in place in the United States are not adequate from the point of view of guaranteeing, I suppose, human rights and democracy, and, you know, a certain minimum level of privacy. Again, just coming back to the point you're making, Michele, if United States organizations or law enforcement or anyone like that, if they want to subpoena information which is held on a Black Knight server, they're going to have to go to the Irish police and to the Irish courts in order to do that, and that will obviously come under whatever scrutiny is in place in terms of Irish law, which isn't as draconian. We can say that reasonably safely, Michele, at the moment. Someone could, for example, for a start, there isn't this super gag or this super injunction order involved when it comes to seeking information on which is held on Irish data.
Well, no, I mean they'd have to come up with some kind of special kind of gag order when they were doing it in order to keep us quiet about it. I mean, as I mentioned in the original blog post and again in the press release, you know, we have not had that many law enforcement information requests down through the years. I mean, we've been offering hosting to the Irish and European and international market for over 10 years now. And in that time, we've only ever had a handful of requests. Mm. And, you know, some of them were for data that would have been public if you knew where to look. It wasn't super confidential or anything.
Can I ask you so, Michele, in the light of this new climate and this new information we have about the NSA and Snowden's revelations and all of that, do you expect that you will see an increased interest from organisations, individuals and companies who feel that perhaps the sensitivity and the rights of their users and of their customers' privacy is not being protected adequately in the American jurisdiction? Do you think that that someone like yourself, who offers this service of being wholly governed by the Irish jurisdiction or European law in this case as well, Do you think that's a selling point? Are you going to see, or have you already seen, maybe you can't talk about it, but have you already seen an interest from customers, given that that is a feature of the service you offer?
Well, yes and no. I mean, the problem, Con, is for a lot of people, there's a switching cost. You know, if you know, you can say, let's say, for example, provider A has a massive outage and it's offline. I mean, the servers fall off the internet and they're offline for hours or days or whatever. And you think to yourself, well, you know, lots of people are going to move away from them. They're going to switch across to ourselves or to somebody else. But the reality is that only a small percentage actually do in the short term. In the medium to long term, you know, they're going to lose business. Mm. And, you know, I think this stuff around all this digital surveillance from various different governments, and it's not just the US government, there's others involved as well, it will have an impact. There's been several reports in the US media over the last few weeks around this. And if you remember Christian Dawson, who we had on there a couple of months back, he was quoted, I think it was in the Washington Post, maybe. I think it was either yesterday, maybe, or today. Let me just double check. Actually, it was today. And the Post blog, the title is, "Prism works because a ton of data moves through US servers. That's also why it could fail." And there is, and basically what the article talks about how it all works and everything else, and it just says that, you know, if it works because it's all moving through US servers, well, if people move the stuff away from the US servers, then it's not going to work anymore.
Let's give a shout out to our listeners on the live stream at digiculture.ie. We might try this next week as well. If you're listening to the recorded podcast, what I'm talking about is the fact that we've tried out on an experimental basis this week to stream the show live as we record it as well. So you can see all the joins and the edits and the mistakes and things like that. We're doing okay though, Michele, you know, on the high wire we're here. Shout out to Jason Rowe, who says hi. And Martin W. is still with us as well. James Gallagher was with us earlier, but he had to go. Raoul D. is there. Shane C. and Phil O'Kane, who's iced coffee, who's a recent hire of yours, Michaela. I've been enjoying his blogging and his photography and his impressions as a new Carlow resident in the last couple of weeks as well. So it's all cool stuff. And welcome. You're all very welcome to the live stream. Let's move on with something a little bit lighthearted, Michaela. And you definitely pulled this one out of the archives without a doubt. Is this real? The Internet Guide from 1997. The Kid's Guide to the Internet. It looks, I got to say, it looks kind of real. It looks 90s. Yeah,
it, as far as I know, it is.
It's a YouTube video. There's a series of these, and it's basically a family who are you know, they're a stage family, they're a TV family. What was this produced for? Do we know anything?
No, I think it might have been for TV, or it could have been a video. I honestly don't know, but it's
just funny to look at it. Everything down to the cathode ray monitors and all that, which were with us until quite recently. But the way they talk about the internet and they're unashamedly enthusiastic about it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's quite amusing.
It is funny. It is good to watch as well. There's a link to that. That's actually on technology.ie as well. You've also posted, Michele, some gadgets and things that you find cool and useful there lately. Slick Slim USB cable. You posted this evening. This fits in your wallet. It looks like a credit card.
Yeah, this. I can't remember how the hell I even came across this. It's a USB a cable for your smartphone, mm-hmm. or a smart device, and they've got versions for Android, iPhone 4, Android, and iPhone 5, and it is credit card sized. It is the thickness of two credit cards. So, I mean, I'm just looking at my own wallet at the moment. My wallet has, you know, six or seven different cards that are credit card size. So, you know, adding two more in. Not that much of a challenge. So, yeah, you can fit this little USB cable in there and off you go.
And is it designed specifically for an Android or for an iPhone? There's iPhone and Android versions, is that the correct?
Yeah, there's iPhone 4, iPhone 4 and iPhone 5 versions, because the connector changed between the iPhone 4 and the iPhone 5. And there's also Android version. I've no idea what the hell the connector on Android is.
So it'll plug that into a standard USB port. So if you find yourself chargerless, cableless, you shouldn't have to go too far to find a USB port and get a bit of juice into your mobile phone, which is vital nowadays, without a doubt. Let's move on. You've blogged about Gary Vaynerchuk. I've seen you tweeting with Gary in the last while. Gary, of course, is an expert on social media marketing. He's in the wine business himself, but that's how he started out. But he's now what, selling his expertise in social media?
Yeah, pretty much. He's got Vayner Media, and they work with a load of Fortune 500 companies, helping them with online marketing, PR, social media engagement, all that kind of stuff. But what was interesting for me was that he's got a new book coming out called Jab, Jab, Right Hook, How to Tell Your Story in a Noisy Social World. And here, let's see, I'm going to play a little bit of video, which will stream.
Hey guys, this is Gary Vaynerchuk. I thought it was important to make a video about this book, Jab, 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 Right Hook, mainly because I communicate better on video.
And he goes on for about 4 minutes explaining all about it.
He's one of the best, really, isn't he, in terms of you know, he's not exactly slick. He's not exactly that kind of polished professional. But what he is hugely effective in terms of how to use social media. He's a native. He's a natural at communicating and at marketing.
He's hilarious. He's absolutely hilarious. I mean, I've watched.
But it works, Michele, is what I'm saying.
Well, this is it. Yeah. I mean, I watched one of his keynotes the other night, and somebody sent me a link to it on Twitter. And it was a keynote from some event over the States about a year and a half, 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And his entire style of speaking, it's so energetic, it's so passionate, and he's a great storyteller, and he really connects with people. And what was interesting, Colm, isn't all that. I mean, all that's wonderful and great and everything else. But what I thought is what really grabbed my attention the other day, and I think I got an email from him about this, or I saw a tweet or a Facebook update or something. I'm not sure how this landed in front of me, as it were. What he's doing is he's pushing pre-orders of his book. Now, the book isn't going to be out until. When is the book out? I think the book isn't out until maybe November or something. November 26th. Yeah, there you go. November 26th is when the book is being released in hardback. What he's doing is he's going, right, I want you to buy my book, but if you buy 5 copies of my book, I'm going to give you a whole bunch of extra content. You buy 30, I'll do other stuff. You buy 60, I'll give a 10-minute personal phone call with you.
You
buy 100, I'll hand select 2 bottles of premium vino and send them along to your office, in addition to a special video where I'll do a 5 to 10 minute custom thing for you.
It sounds like a crowdfunding. Is that what it is, Mikhail?
No, it's not at all.
I mean, but he's using some of those tricks.
Well, what he's doing is he's just kind of going, right, I'm launching this book in November. I mean, it's very clever. If he can get people to buy into this, and I don't know how successful he's being with that, he can probably get that book into the top 10 on Amazon, like, from the get-go. It'll go into the bestseller list.
Absolutely.
Immediately. Actually, let's just see, is it showing a ranking already? Just bear me 1 second, Colin.
In terms of pre-orders, there.
Let's see. Do we have a sales rank? We've got Amazon bestseller ranks. Yeah, number 7. It's 9,225 in all books, which, in fairness, considering the size of the Amazon catalog, is pretty damn good. Yeah. It's number 7 in the web marketing category at the moment.
You know, I mean, not only is it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, because not only is he's so effective at marketing the book, that feeds into the fact that anyone who's interested in marketing or promotion is going to say, well, I've got to read this book, because the fact that he's promoted this book so successfully means he's got something to say. We've got to get him on the show, Michele.
Well, I'm not sure how easy that's going to be, but okay.
I leave it to you, okay? I know you're good at this.
Oh dear, oh dear. Well, we'll ask him anyway.
All right.
I mean, the thing is this. I mean, this one here. Like, come on, look at this one. Hmm. Buy 4,000 copies of the book, and he'll give you a keynote.
Excellent. Well, again, if
so
you're
doing a barter thing,
yeah,
asking you to barter with them. Here's what have quick listen to this.
Hey, everybody, it's Gary. First of all, thank you so much for clicking the play button. It means you've taken the time to look at what I'm doing with Jab, and it means the yes, stun that I call it Jab. It means the world to me that you're considering this barter thing. This video is probably one of the more exciting videos that I've ever been able to make because I grew up trading baseball cards. You know, I'm that kind of guy, right? I love garage sales, buy and put on eBay, flip the barter, the deal. So here it is. You see all the other deals going on around, right? Andrew, look, I'm not pointing anywhere. All the other deals, we haven't just signed a paycheck. All the other deals that are going on around. And so use them as a guiding star, a North Star, to fill out this form and make an offer to me. So don't get too crazy. I'm not gonna have dinner with you for 3 books. Use it as a really smart guidance to the fact that I'm looking to sell books and this is a moment in time and you're looking for something in return. So let's make a deal, make an offer, and I'll get back to you. Thanks for watching the bid, and hopefully I'll see you soon.
That's fantastic.
I just thought, you know, there's another one. He posted something earlier this evening, and it's a short outtake from a longer keynote he gave. And it's just like, you know, marketers are killing everything, or marketers destroy everything. And he put that, he created a graphic, shoved that on Facebook, and that got a lot of reaction. Mm. And then within about 2 hours, he'd got Busted Tees, you know, the T-shirt website, to create a T-shirt.
Oh, wait a minute, I get it. If you invite him on the show, he's going to want us to buy some books in return for that, I get it.
That's, you're already copying on to that now.
All right, let's move on, Michaela. We've got to wrap the show up. Bradley Manning I want to talk about. I want to talk to you about Dirty Dancing in a minute, but let's finish on a light note. And before that, we'll talk about Bradley Manning has been sentenced to 35 years in prison for disclosing sensitive government documents. And he has asked the President Obama for pardon, but is ready to pay a heavy price for living in a free society. That's this is a report on Russia Today, RT.com. You've posted this, Michele. What do you think of the sentence, first of all?
Well, it's better than it could have been.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, you know, when the initial verdict was handed down, when was that? Was that about 10 days ago, maybe? They were talking about how he could face up to, you know, a couple of hundred years in jail, which, you know, obviously it's pretty much a death sentence. But now, you know, this came out earlier today. He's been sentenced to 35 years. He's already served, is it 2.5 years? And there's also talk as well about, you know, the conditions under which he's served time so far. But what's interesting is that his lawyer is already lining up the appeals.
And as this article points out, there are appeals. There is eligibility for parole in due course and that as well. So, you know, I suppose nobody is disputing that, or he isn't disputing. Well, he probably is, but I mean, the fact is that there would have had to have been some kind of sentence here. He's paying a heavy price as it is, but it does look like there is the likelihood or the possibility at some stage down the line, Michele, that he will actually be able to rebuild his life.
Maybe, but I mean, 35 years, you know, that's a long time.
It is, but I'm assuming that there would be, you know, as I say, eligibility for parole after.
Well, not necessarily, because one of the things that, you know, this around this entire court case and you know, the same thing with the Snowden debacle, I mean, some hardliners would look at it, you know, that these guys are lucky that they're not being executed. So,
but again, in the context of everything that's going on, Michele, and everything that's been revealed in the last couple of months, it's going to be, I wonder, are we going to see attitudes change? Maybe not in the next year or 2 years. Depends how long the war on terror, is it going to go on forever? You know, at some point, maybe 5 years, 10 years down the line, are we going to be in a worse or a better situation in terms of global stability? You know, it's as all I'm saying is that it's not inconceivable that at some point down the line that not only would the climate have changed, but that also maybe the attitudes might have changed in regard to the actions which were taken by Private Manning. Who knows? Let's move on, Michele. Before we go, you've posted this, or you popped it in there at the last minute. Is this a tech story, Michele? Dirty Dancing, the anniversary, celebrating the classic movie turning 26. Let me disclose my interest, first of all. I am a fan, and have been since it came out, of Dirty Dancing. But where's the tech angle here?
It was shared on the interwebs.
Oh, of course. Perfect. Well, no, that's good enough for me. Go on anyway. Tell me about this.
Sorry. No, it's been 26 years today since the film was first released. August 21st, 1987. And this is, it's an article found over on the Huffington Post.
Yeah.
And the opening line, the world was introduced to the timeless lesson that nobody puts baby in a corner.
And then there's a whole load of references to the culture.
Well, this is the thing. It's like,
yeah,
the power that film has had across popular culture in the last 26 years. So there's like Crazy Stupid Love, Ryan Gosling's character does something. In the OC, there's a reference, Uncle Buck, New Girl, seemingly New Kids on the Block of a song. I didn't know that. Gilmore Girls. There's another group called Fallout Boy. Never heard of them, never mind. Another show, Jersey Girl. Neil Patrick Harris getting up to stuff. And there's probably other pop culture references that they haven't actually picked up on.
It's embarrassing. Raoul D points this out in the chat room as well, and I've got to say I've got to admit it as well. It's a film that dates you, I think, even though it has won fans, I think, every year since, and in each generation since. But it's certainly, as someone who was at a very impressionable age when that film came out originally, and it was a film I went on dates with girls to watch.
How many times did you see it? Come?
It's funny. I back when it came out first, I remember watching it with somebody in the movies. I remember then watching it, renting the video and watching it one evening with my current wife, as they like to say. But I remember we watched it one evening and she had never seen it, and I wanted to introduce her to it because, you know, for all kinds of reasons, it was a film that I think that people related to, and it was a good film. But I remember, I think she fell asleep actually during the first time we watched it, and then we woke up and then she woke up and we put it on again and watched it a second time. I think I fell asleep during the second viewing of it. But it's something I've seen, countless times, I've got to say. I watched it again recently, Michele. It doesn't, and it doesn't get old, really.
No, I mean, I think it's aged really, really well. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's sad, of course. I mean, Patrick Swayze died, years ago?
Yeah, it has aged better than some of its stars. And indeed, Jennifer Grey never really went on to have the kind of success. I thought she was a fabulous actress. And she had a couple of interesting roles a few times after that, or a couple of years after that, but never really made the big time, even though I thought she was fantastic. I thought they were fabulous together, the dancing, everything. I got to say, it's a film that going to have to take it out and watch it maybe for the 27th anniversary.
It's actually kind of scary now looking at there. Patrick Swayze died in September 2009.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's more
that's
than...
That's 4 years.
Yeah, it is.
Wow.
It is. Listen, Michele, it's been great talking to you this evening. It's been great to have the company of our friends in the chat room. Shout out there. Who's still with us? Martin is still with us, I think. Raoul D is still with us. And Phil O'Kane, Shane C, and a couple of others still with us there as well.
Phil O'Kane. I think Phil dropped out.
Did he? Okay. This has been fun. Interesting.
Okay, so you're going to stop the recording and...
This is where we stop.